Lecture 10, The Persian Conquest.
In this lecture, I wish to bring to a conclusion the four lectures that deal with the early Iron Age in Asia Minor. And the primary players in this lecture are going to be the Persians, people from Iran who built this great empire that stretched from the lower Danube to the Indus Valley, and probably in 500 BC counted some 4 million or 45 million residents who were subjects of the great king of Persia. And as I mentioned in closing, that the information on the Persian Empire comes not only from their monumental inscriptions and from their building programs and archaeology, but also from the wealth of information from Greek historians, who really make some of these Persian kings and other figures come alive as individuals to us. Now, it might be wondered why so much time should be devoted to Persia, and you have to remember that the Persian kings dominated the Near East for over 250 years, and in that period, Asia Minor was an extremely important part of the Persian Empire. And the Persian period, in a way, takes much of that peninsula and reintegrates it into the Near East. And that theme I've constantly been stressing, that is, the peninsula is drawn towards Europe, the Mediterranean world, and we've spent the last three lectures really hitting very hard on the Greek connection. It's now good for us to step back and realize that with the conquest of Lydia in 546 BC, that the peninsula was again drawn back into those traditional ties with the Near East. They were always there, even during the period I was lecturing of early Greek civilization. But nonetheless, the Persian rule has a very important impact in defining and changing the direction of Anatolian civilization. Also, for the first time, Asia Minor is now part of a world empire. This had never been the case before. Before, the major powers in Asia Minor were dominant on the plateau. In this case, Persia was able to organize Asia Minor into a series of satrapies or provinces. And again, Asia Minor will have this fate in the Roman period, where Asia Minor is part of a wider Mediterranean empire rather than a Near Eastern empire. And then again in the Ottoman period, where Asia Minor is actually the core of a Balkan and Middle Eastern empire. So this is the first occasion where Asia Minor, the various civilizations of Asia Minor, are part of this wider political and cultural order. These are two important points I want to stress. Now, how did the Persians end up conquering Asia Minor? Well, in the collapse of the Assyrian Empire, which occurred in 612 BC, when the subjects of the Assyrian Empire rose up, took their capital at Nineveh, and obliterated Assyrian power, the Assyrian Empire, in effect, split up into its constituent parts. There was a resurgent native dynasty in Egypt, the so-called 26th dynasty, which invited many of the Greek merchants and colonists into the Nile Valley. I spoke about that impact on the Greek world. There was a so-called Neo-Babylonian Empire, that is the last of the great Mesopotamian empires, going back to the Akkadian Empire. This is the empire of Nebuchadnezzar, the famous Hanging Gardens of Babylon, which dominated the Fertile Crescent, that is the Levant, and Mesopotamia. Lydia gathered together the various Anatolian states into the kingdom that was ruled over by Aliates and Chryses. And to the east, as a result of Persian aggression, the peoples dwelling in what is now Iran, the Medes in the northwest and the Persians in the southwest, these people coalesced into kingdoms, and the kings of the Medes imposed a confederation or hegemony over the various Iranian peoples and emerged as a dominant kingdom. And in the aftermath of the collapse of Assyrian power, the Median Empire appeared as the first great empire based on armies of cavalry. The Iranian plateau offered ideal conditions, and the king of the Medes also took over what is called Transcaucasia, Armenia and Georgia, and parts of eastern Anatolia, parts of that old Hittite empire, which in many ways are geographically an extension of the Iranian plateau. And in that area, the conditions were ideal for sustaining those huge cavalry armies. And the Iranians had the horses to mount that cavalry. Later Chinese sources of the 2nd century BC refer to the horses as the heavenly horses sweating blood. Now, we don't know what the sweating blood is all about, but they were certainly remarkable horses that allowed for cavalry, whereas horses in China were really nothing more than Shetland ponies up until that point.